Our next presenter will be Jason Matz, and he's going to be talking about correction of potassium deficiency in soybean production in southeast Kansas. Jason.
Thank you, Robert, and good morning, everyone. Today I will be talking to you about correction of potassium deficiency in soybean production in southeast Kansas. Potassium deficiency has become a much more common and widespread issue in southeast Kansas, especially in the last decade. This is likely due to the increase in soils testing low in exchangeable K levels. It's not uncommon to see soils in the area test in the 50 to 80 milligram per kilogram range, which is well below the optimum level of 130 that's used in the state. Another contributing factor is extreme seasonal K variability that many producers and consultants have documented in their soil test history. Some producers have evidence of up to 50% variability in soil test K levels on just an annual basis. This has raised a lot of questions and concerns on how to interpret soil test K and the proper K management practices that should be implemented to optimize crop yields. So our main objective was to track and monitor soil test K levels over time to see if we couldn't capture any K variability. And then with that data, see if we couldn't analyze it to try to decipher any driving mechanisms that are causing these extreme changes. Then we wanted to assess whether crop yields were being impacted by this K variability, as well as develop any alternative K management strategies to help producers in their making K fertilization decisions if needed. So here's a look at our field sites. Our field trials were established on cooperative fields. In 2009, we initiated the study at four locations in Cherokee County. 2010, we added four more sites to the same general area. In 2011, this last year, we added three sites, two to Cherokee County and one to Wilson County. But due to time constraints today, we're just going to try to focus on the sites that were established in 2009. Here's a look at the soil classification across the locations. At each location, we had a Cherokee silt loam soil. And the soils in this area are very highly weathered clay pan soils with low CECs, low organic matters. The pH at each location was within the range for optimum K availability. The phosphorus levels at each location were above the critical values of 20 milligrams per kilogram. The one interesting thing is when we selected these sites in 2009, we looked at soil results that were given to us by the cooperator from 2007. In each location, the sites tested below the critical value of 130. However, when we initiated the study and soil sampled, they were all above the critical value. So right off the out of the gates, we were dealing with some K variability issues. Our crop rotation was a wheat double crop soybean corn rotation. It's a very popular and intense crop rotation used in the area, having three crops in a two-year span. In 2009 here, if I can figure out where am I, there we go. We applied annual and biannual K applications. And in 2010, we did some work with corn, and we just applied annual treatments in that given year. We applied treatments post-planting, but tried to apply them prior to the V4 growth stage for each crop. Here's a look at our treatments. Our treatments were designed to look at soybean response to increased K fertilization either being broadcast or surface band applied, as well as in the following year with the rotational corn crop, we wanted to look at corn response to either direct versus residual fertilization. Application methods, as I mentioned, we use a traditional broadcast method as well as a surface band K application. The idea with using surface band was to try to maximize or try to get, the fertilizer as close to the crop rows we possibly could to maximize K availability without disturbing the soil. And you can't really see real clearly with the picture, but that band is right along that soybean row. We tried to get the bands within about 4 centimeters, or not 4 centimeters, around 10 centimeters to the row if we could. We used a randomized complete block experimental design with four replications. Our plot dimensions were 15 by 6 meters. There was some additional other fertilization added. Phosphate was added at a rate of 45 kilograms per hectare in 2009 and 2010. And in 2010, we also applied nitrogen at a rate of 160 kilograms per hectare to the corn crop. We soil sample the check and the broadcast high rate treatments on a 1 to 2 month basis. Throughout the growing season, we use a 0 to 15 centimeter soil sampling depth. We try to collect up to 10 to 12 cores to make up one composite sample for each plot. Soybean leaf samples were taken at the R3 and R4 growth stages, and corn leaf samples were collected at the R1 growth stage. Plots were all harvested at physiological maturity, and the yields were adjusted accordingly for each crop. And our data was statistically analyzed using SAS-PROC GLM at alpha level 0.05. Here's a look at our soil results. This is ammonium acetate exchangeable K levels over time. This is averaged across the four locations. The top line is with K fertilization, and that fertilizer was applied in July of 09 at a rate of 202 kilograms per hectare, and then no more fertilization was added. The bottom line is without the soil test K level without fertilization. You can see how K fertilization increased the soil test K levels. You can also see how both soil test K level for each treatment seems to follow a similar and distinct trend throughout the 2 year period. During the growing season for each crop, we see a decrease in K over time. We associate that to some of the crop removing some of the K from the soil. In between the growing seasons, you see a K buildup. We associate that to K being released from the crop residues. The one thing that is hard to explain is between July of 2009 to July of 2011, we had a net change in soil test K level in the check plots at 48 milligrams per kilogram, which cannot be explained using standardized crop removal rates. This is the same graph except with monthly precipitation integrated into it. Early on in the study, it seemed like we had a pretty good consistent relationship between wetting and drying periods and soil test K levels. During the wetter months, soil test K levels seemed to increase, and during the drier months, they seemed to decrease. As the study progressed, however, that relationship got a lot more inconsistent. We still feel that it's not a perfect relationship, but we still feel that these wetting and drying episodes could be driving soil test K levels to a certain extent. This is the critical level put up on the graph there. I just wanted to stick that on there so you could see how soil test K levels were fluctuating in relation to that critical value of 130 milligrams per kilogram. This is the 2009 soybean results. In the pot set leaf data, all the treatments were within the sufficiency range of 17 to 25 grams per kilogram. Increased K fertilization for both pod set and pod fill leaf samples seemed to increase K leaf concentrations in the soybeans. In the pod set data, there was a significant difference between the high broadcast rate and the high surface band applications, but we never did observe any statistical yield differences between the treatments. It's a very similar story in the 2010 corn results. All the leaf samples were once again within the sufficiency range. Increased K fertilization seemed to increase leaf K concentrations. We didn't observe a statistical difference in between application methods or timing, and there was no observed statistical difference in the yield once again in this year. So conclusions, we definitely were able to document and observe changes in soil test K levels over time, and not only on a yearly basis as well as a monthly basis. We associate some of these changes to crop K removal, K being released from crop residues, as well as to a certain extent wetting and drying periods. As far as the crop response data, increased K fertilization seemed to increase K leaf concentrations for both the corn and soybeans. However, we never did observe a statistical yield differences with either crop. There was no significant yield differences between application methods, and residual K fertilization appeared to work just as sufficiently as direct K fertilization. So soil sampling, to date our best recommendation for producers and consultants is a soil sample in the spring prior to corn, and to soil sample at this given time throughout the crop rotation to try to minimize K variability over the long term and still maintain those K levels at or above the current critical level of 130 milligrams per kilogram is advised. We did not experience an observed yield differences among with either crop when the levels dipped below. Like, for instance, in corn, check plots, we dipped pretty close to around 90 milligrams per kilogram. But by maintaining at this 130, we feel that we have a little bit of a kale availability cushion. So in a given year, when we experience these dips in K levels, it's not going to be low enough to induce potassium deficiency. So I'd like to thank my major professor, Dr. Dave Mingle, for the opportunity to work on this project, my committee members for their contributions, our research assistant scientists and fellow grad students for all their time and efforts, as well as the cooperating farmers for their resources and patience, and the Kansas Soybean Commission for the project funding. So now I'll entertain any questions.
Thank you,
Jason. Yep.
We do have about 5 minutes if anybody has any questions.
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, you obviously have soil K levels. It was below the critical level for your significant periods of time during the course of the experiment, but yet you obtain no response regardless of rate or method of application.
Yeah. That's a good question. It makes us question whether the critical level is truly at 130. From this data, it seems that the critical level may be around more like around 80 milligrams per kilogram. That may be where we really observe a yield difference. This last year, we had soils in the 30 to 40 to 50 milligram per kilogram range. And we did have a yield response at one of the locations that we've harvested. We still have two more locations to harvest yet this year. So hopefully we'll get a better understanding of where that baseline really is, that we're going to see a yield increase in relation to soil test K and where we won't. The only thing that really concerns us is if we try to make recommendations, say, off a lower level of 80 milligrams per kilogram, that isn't just going to increase the problem that many farmers are experiencing in relation to potassium deficiency. So
what soil test level are the farmers experiencing?
It's good. I mean, with us, I can answer that question based off what we observed. For the most part, once you get below probably 60, there's a pretty good likely chance you're going to see some potassium deficiency, especially in this last year in Kansas. It was really droughty, and that given year, potassium deficiency was pretty pronounced, at least two of our locations. So I think once you get down into 80 milligram per kilogram range in soil test K, you're asking for problems at that point, in my opinion. We haven't looked at that at all, no.
Is that in your plans?
Not in my plans. It may be in Dr. Mingle's plans. That may be something that we consider analyzing. I mean, this project, we're obviously still trying to understand what's driving a lot of this variability. At this point, it's not causing detrimental impacts to yield, but we still like to understand it so we can answer questions like that. So the work will continue. Hopefully we'll have better answers in the next couple of years. So. Yeah.
Not overly optimistic. Do we have any other questions? We do have another couple of minutes. Do we have any more questions?
Yes. Yep.
I realize that's still long. What's the predominant clay type?
There was some work done by Paul Hartley a couple of years ago. And obviously, it wasn't on our locations, but locations in southeast Kansas. Kaolinite is the predominant clay mineral in the soil. So he did find traces of smectite and vermiculite clays. So there is some potential of some K fixation due to clay mineralogy. But from what he found, there's not a real likelihood, a lot high potential of it. But it still could be impacting, especially with these wetting and drying periods we experienced. We assume that that clay mineralogy is obviously driving that during those drier months with the decreasing, maybe K fixations occurring. During the wetter months, maybe K release is occurring. So,
Carrie?
Is there any relationship with tillage system and compaction and driving some of the response?
Yeah, you know, with our study, it didn't. Now, I should say, I guess this year with one site, we did have a no-till site, and it actually was, out of the three sites this last year, it had the highest soil test K levels, and it was a no-till, continuous no-till fill for, I think it's been in no-till for several years, and it did have a lot more potassium deficiency issues. So a tillage aspect could be causing more of a problem, especially in no-till, but with our data right now, we currently can't evaluate that completely and say we can only make assumptions. So that could be a big part of it, though.
One more question if we've got it. Thank you, Jason.
All right, thank you.
Good job.